Hello and welcome. Now, you are tuned in to 2SER 107.3, and it is time for Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel, and welcome back. We were still here over summer, but we were reprising and revisiting some of the great conversations from 2019. Great Conversations, incidentally, is the podcast that you can keep up with every week on Final Draft. And now it is time for me to tell you that it's you know, 2020 is kicking off properly. I have been doing a stack of reading, and I have got some amazing, great conversations to share with you. And I'm starting really strong, because the books are just fabulous so far. Today on the show, I have got a conversation with a debut author, and this is one of the strongest debuts that I have read recently. It is very early to be saying this, but it is an early favorite for probably my book of the year. I want to introduce Laura McPhee Brown's Cherry Beach. It is this incredibly beautiful, wrenching story of two friends and the progress of their friendship. Now, Laura is going to be up on the show later on, and I'm going to give her a chance to talk more about this incredibly beautiful book that I have just absolutely loved reading. Also, if you keep in touch with these things, you may already know that on Thursday night, the Stella Prize announced its long list. The Stella Prize is a prize that's now been going for, I think this is its eighth year, celebrating Australian women writers. So 12 authors have been announced. They are the long list for the prize. It will be narrowed down to the short list on the 6th of March. And then in April, we will find out who the Stella Prize winner is. So later on in the show, I'm going to be letting you know which titles have made the long list, and we'll talk a little bit about just how amazing the Stella Prize is and what strength there is in writing in Australia. So coming up on the show, it is Cherry Beach. I'm going to be sharing my conversation with Laura McPhee Brown. I am Andrew Popel. This is Final Draft, and it's all coming up after this short break.
In the House cult film Classics returns to Event Cinemas George Street on February 12th, screening Sylvester Stallone's classic Rocky.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Why do you want to fight?
Because I can't sing or dance. Yo.
Do not miss your favourite cult classics back on the big screen now on Wednesday nights. Check the full film list and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You are on 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. I am joined on the line by Laura McPhee Brown. Laura is a writer, a social worker, and a counsellor whose work has appeared in publications like Mianjin, Kill Your Darlings, and Archer. And today I am really fortunate to have her on the line to discuss her debut novel, Cherry Beach. Welcome, Laura. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's a pleasure. Thanks, Andrew.
Now, Cherry Beach is the story of a friendship. Hetty and Ness have been friends since childhood, and now they're in Toronto discovering something of their life and themselves. That's a pretty simple intro, and I think, Laura, it fails in many ways to capture Cherry Beach. But I wondered then how you introduced Cherry Beach to people.
Yes. Well, I'm not particularly good at it, I don't think. But I think I just sort of say that it's about a close friendship between two young women, and I do often say that the protagonist is in love with her best friend, and yeah, they go over to live together overseas in Canada, and kind of from there their friendship changes, and they learn a lot about themselves, and yeah, that's probably as much as I can say.
Now, from the outset, I noticed that Ness's idealization of Hetty, she sees her friend as effortlessly wonderful in all the ways that Ness feels she's not. And that's really apparent right from the very beginning, and the language that she uses. It has this effect of making Ness automatically kind of Hetty's subordinate in things. And it perhaps clouds her vision on what she has to offer, both within and outside her friendship with Hetty. Can you talk to me a bit about that, the role that self-image, its powers and its dangers plays in Cherry Beach?
Yeah, well, I think I did want to write about that I guess being friends with someone from a very young age, so you grow together and you start to understand who you are together, and that can be challenging because it means that the dynamic is part of who you understand yourself to be. But finally, when Ness gets to kind of be, you know, find out a bit more about herself in Toronto and make other friendships and relationships, I think she realises that there's just more to her, and that her dynamic with Hedy, I mean, it's never kind of really spoken about or written about in the book, but I think she kind of realises she's being held back. And I think that's really common in long-time friendships, and there's such beautiful parts of being friends with someone since you were little, but also it can really, cloud you in your mind for other people and who you are. Because, for me, in my life, I've compared myself to other people compulsively, and I think the person that's closest to you is going to be the one you compare yourself to the most. So.
It struck me also that a part of that sort of beautiful dynamic of having a friend for so long is that so much goes unspoken, and we idealize that. We have this idea that we know each other so well, say, that we finish each other's sentences, but something about that, and it really gets sort of brought to the surface when Hedy and Ness move into the share house, and Ness is making new friends and very explicitly exploring herself in a way that she doesn't with Hedy. And I noticed that danger in that both of them had failed to really articulate things, and on one level they knew each other, but on the other they didn't know each other at all.
Yeah. And I think that's so, well, it's sort of like, to me, a bit inevitable if you grow up with someone, because you're learning about how to communicate and how to have healthy relationships, but that relationship's already established. So you might get into patterns that if you met later in life, you could actually, you know, have an entirely different kind of dynamic and friendship with this person. Mm-hmm. And I think for me as a person, I've actually, you know, found that as I get older, I'm much more likely to establish a really strong friendship with someone from the get-go, because I know myself better, they know themselves better, we've had practice at communicating. So, I think Ness was certainly starting to realise she had so much more potential, but still not, you know, very much at the beginning of that realisation in the book.
Yeah, for the reader, or for myself as a reader, I found Cherry Beach was a book that brought these beautiful realizations to the surface. And maybe that's the first one that I would share with people, is this idea that, you know, don't assume and don't leave things unsaid because you think the other person's just going to know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to do that, I think, because otherwise you will assume something about their position on whatever you haven't told them, but you've not given them a chance to actually, you know, talk to you about it. Yeah, as you say.
Yeah. Now, Hedy and Ness, they've travelled to Toronto to escape, to adventure, to discover more about themselves. I wondered, have trips like this become an essential part of growing up, of the adulting process?
Yeah, well, I've been actually writing something about that. Well, I think for me, I mean, I've just been so lucky. I've been able to go and travel and live in a few places. And I lived in Manila in the Philippines when I was a bit younger, for 6 months, and then obviously Toronto, and just traveling as well to a lot around Asia. And it was very... I think I learned a lot, particularly in the Philippines, a lot about myself and a lot about just understanding the world in a completely different way. And that was just, I think, really helpful for me as I was growing up. I think we're just going to have to rethink all of that, though, because we can't be flying around the world when we know the carbon footprint. And particularly for Australians, we're isolated from a lot of the rest of the world. So it's going to, I think it will be different in the future. And there's a lot that we can learn, like back here in Australia as well, that I think we don't necessarily learn about or involve ourselves in because we just think we have to get away. So
there is definitely that huge amount of privilege that comes with travel and with being able to stay and live in different places. And I feel where you're coming from because I've been so fortunate in having those opportunities myself. It also makes me wonder, does it create any sort of divide or just even an interesting juxtaposition between people who choose that and people who, for circumstance or otherwise, don't choose that?
I think it just... Yeah, it definitely does, which is, you sort of try to be mindful of that if you're talking to people who haven't sort of been able to have those experiences. But, I don't know what kind of divide, but I think, there's certain things that I feel like I've only been able to experience when I was not at home, and things I learnt about how to be away from your home, but in a very privileged way, away from my home. I wasn't fleeing my home. I was just choosing to be away. That might make me wonder, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to answer it, but I think there is something there, a divide,
So on arriving in Toronto, Ness notes to herself that I was standing on the edge of something, next to Hedy, but a little bit alone, and it could have been a cliff or a diving board. I was really struck by this image, and one thing that struck me was a big difference, especially for the way we live or the way Ness was going to live her life, is not in the resulting fall from the cliff or the diving board, but in whether a choice was made to go over or not. Like that diving board sort of implies you're there, you're choosing, you want to take that plunge, whereas the cliff maybe not so much. What do you think about that idea of being conscious and making choices as opposed to letting sort of circumstance wash by?
I think you sort of with that decision to jump, which I think they did do, they didn't just fall off the cliff, was making a conscious decision, but then making a decision to let circumstances then be the kind of what, to guide the rest of their time. So they sort of decided to go over there, but really didn't make that many plans and sort of thought, we should do it, but we want to see how it goes and we won't plan or try to guide the actual experience when we get there. So that sort of, for me in my life, I've always been the kind of person who probably because I'm very lucky and I've never really suffered very much, I've been able to really take risks and plan to an extent but not really worry about what might happen if I don't plan it completely or I just see where it goes. So I think that was just coming from me, knowing that that's a way that you can do things if you're lucky enough to. And I think that's what they were doing, a bit of both.
Mental health is an important thread throughout the novel. Now, I don't want to spoil any of the story except to note that our mental health plays just this huge role in the ways that we tell our stories. And the idea of an unreliable narrator is always a ripe topic for discussion in literature. Ness's telling is coloured from the outset by the way she idealizes Hetty, by her anxiety that she doesn't meet up in many ways. But it also struck me that all of our tellings, they're essentially unreliable until we take that time to connect and to understand the place where the storyteller is coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I did. When I was starting to write it, for some reason, I didn't want to write it in the present tense. So I was writing from Ness looking back on it. But from just a few years later, sort of just became like that because I wanted it to be she was remembering how enamoured she was by Hetty and how it was at the time, but also there was a small element of her being able to explain that in a way you wouldn't be able to really explain it if you were in it to an extent, I think. Yeah. But, so that kind of... made her a little bit more reliable. But there's it's hard to talk about that without kind of maybe giving a spoiler, but I just really find that interesting, the whole unreliable narrator as well, because in my work as a social worker in the past, I've worked with people who hear voices and may have a diagnosis of schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or having a psychotic break or bipolar. But I think for those people, a lot of the time, as soon as they get that diagnosis or as soon as they tell someone about their experience, they're seen as an unreliable narrator in their own life. And that is very, you know, I can imagine that would be very, very difficult and confronting and would make you feel angry and sad and confused. And I just really don't know if that's even true, because who's to say that what someone experiences, just because it's not, you know, what the majority of us hear or see or experience, that it's not real. And yeah, I kind of wanted to kind of explore that a tiny bit in the book as well.
I am speaking with Laura McPhee Brown. Her debut novel is Cherry Beach. And it is a magnificent novel. It has brought so much to the last few months of my life.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
You are on 2SER 107.3, and I am your host, Andrew Popel. This is Final Draft, Books, Writing and Literary Culture. I want to talk about the Stella Prize in a few minutes, but to get us there, I've got a track for you. This is from Portland singer-songwriter Alexandra Saviour, and it's called Can't Help Myself.
Ideas to life in Sydney's newest makerspace at Darling Square Library. Get hands-on in workshops to learn 3D design and printing using Tinkercad and Fusion 360, laser cutting, robotics or prototyping. Weekly Maker Time sessions offer a great intro to all equipment and tools, with starter projects and makerspace kits to try out. All workshops are led by expert makers with beginner to advanced levels available. Book now at cityofsydney.nsw.gov.au/library programs. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. Now, this is Final Draft, and I am Andrew Popel. Just there, we heard from Alexandra Saviour there with Can't Help Myself. And right now, I mentioned at the top of the show that on Thursday night, we had the announcement of the Stella Prize long list. If you are a regular listener to the show, you know that Final Draft is a huge fan and huge supporter of the Stella Prize. It is a prize that is open to female and non-binary writers in Australia, and it rewards the best female writing from the past 12 months. Now, the long list are the 12 books that are going to be vying for the main prize in April, and it's always just an incredible list. It's basically, you know, if you have a book club, this is your book club for 2020, already sorted. And look, in announcing the long list, the judges have praised the diversity, which includes Indigenous stories told in traditional Aboriginal song spirals, memoir, social history, a young adult novel, graphic memoir. This is just such a diverse reading list. And of course, I want to know who's going to win, but we've got a couple of months before we find that out. So let's find out who has actually made the long list. And the long list is decided by the 2020 Stella Prize judges, who are Louise Swin, Jack Lattimore, Zoya Patel, Lenny Shilton, and Monica Attard. And it's just an incredible list. And I'm looking at it. I think I'm looking at it in reverse alphabetical order. No, I'm just looking at it in the order that the Stella Prize website has it. If you want to find out more about the long list, you can go to thestellaprize.com.au. And the 2020 long list includes Charlotte Wood's The Weeknd. Charlotte Wood, of course, won the Stella Prize a few years back for The Natural Way of Things, so she has got another chance this year. Lucky Ticket by Joey Bui. This is a debut, and I've got it on my reading list at home, so I'm really looking forward to checking it out. Paper Emperors by Sally Young. This looks at the rise of Australia's newspaper empires. So some really fascinating things, I guess, to consider in that book, given the state of the media landscape. And really, I mean, the old days when it was just newspapers and we didn't have so much of the online news that we consume. See What You Made Me Do from Jess Hill. This looks at, the byline is power, control and domestic abuse. So this looks at the epidemic of domestic abuse in Australia. Mandy Ord's When One Person Dies, The Whole World Is Over. We have There Was Still Love by Favel Parrott. We have Here Until August, stories from Josephine Rowe. This Is How We Change the Ending from Vicky Wakefield. This is YA. I actually read this over the summer and loved it. I'm not going to comment too much on the books, though, because I've not read them all. Although I say that, and then the next book on the list in front of me is Tara June Winch's The Yield, which, if you have been tuning in, I did a 2019 wrap-up where I called The Yield my book of the year. I absolutely love it. So I'm just showing my bias there. We have Song Spirals from the Gaywu Group of Women. It's sharing women's wisdom of country through song lines. We have The House of Yusuf from Yumna Kassab. Diving Into Glass from Cara Llewellyn. And that is The 12. Look, I'll get that up on the social media sites like Final Drafts. You can also go to thestellaprize.com.au. But that is the Stella 2020 long list. It's an exciting read. It's, I keep saying this, it's your book club made for the year, ready to go. We've got a month to wait. On the 6th of March, the shortlist will be announced, the six books that will be vying for the big prize. And then I think it's Wednesday, the 8th of April. We'll check that on the social medias. Wednesday, the 8th of April, the prize will be announced. And of course, we will have something to say about that here on Final Draft. But till then, check out those 12 books and just be amazed at the diversity and wealth of fantastic writing that exists in Australia. It is a really great way to take the pulse of our country, to learn more about where you live, and just, I don't know, also on rainy days, have a nice night in. You are on Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel. Of course, there is more fantastic programming coming up on 2SER, but it is almost time for me to say goodbye. If you have missed anything, if you would like to catch more of my conversation with Laura McPhee Brown, Final Draft is also in podcast form, the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Whenever I chat to authors, those conversations seem to... They're just these wonderful chats that expand into the topic and go into all sorts of surprising places. And not always does the whole conversation make it to air, because I've only got a half an hour with you. The Final Draft Great Conversations podcast is where I put up everything that that gets said, almost everything in the interview. It's another great way to sort of spend 20 minutes to half an hour of your day discovering more about the books you love, meeting the authors that write them. So go to wherever you get your podcasts, look for Final Draft Great Conversations, and look, if you are enjoying it, you can subscribe, get one every week, and give us a rating, because it is a way to help others find us and share that book love. I will be back next week with more Final Draft. I have got I've got so much great fantasy writing from Australian authors. End of last year, we had Maria Lewis's The Wailing Woman, and there is just so much strong fantasy being written by Australian authors. I'm going to share some of it with you next week, so that's something to look forward to. Until then, my name is Andrew Popel. This is, I'm going to leave you with the track. This is from Sydney band Bruise Pristine. It's brand new. I think it only came out a week ago. So check it out. This is Tired Eyes from Bruise Pristine. I'm Andrew Popel, and I'll see you next week. Till then, happy reading.
got a creative flair and a talent for photography? Entries are now open for the internationally acclaimed Head On Photo Festival 2020. Categories include portrait and landscape, as well as our special school student category. Finalists will, of course, have their work featured at the Festival Hub. Don't miss your chance to win from a prize pool of $70,000 at the Head On Photo Awards. Enter at headon.com.au/awards before February 16.